You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Okay, now, especially if you're way down under. As you know, we have a wonderful connection throughout the Pacific. And here we are sitting in the biggest health threat we've ever known in our lives. And the same thing is going on throughout the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council area. That, as you know, the of all the councils in the country, we are by far the largest in landmass, covering just this huge chunk of the ocean. And, you know, way back in the day, when the Magnuson-Stevens Act first went in, there wasn't a lot of attention paid to our brothers in Polynesia. And as you know, we've always had a very kindred relationship with the people in Samoa and in American Samoa. And one of the things that we're going to do today is give you a little lesson on what goes on in Samoa, because it's probably a lot like it was here in Hawaii 40 or 50 years ago, with the big reliance on you grow your own food and you catch your own fish. And speaking about that, when they discovered they had plenty of fish, guess what? The biggest industry in the country reared up, and it was called tuna cannery. And it's kind of a coincidence. Archie Soliai is the chair of the council, and he's also with Starkist. So we're going to kill two birds with one stone here, and we're going to say all the way from, 6,000, 7,000 miles away from where I'm sitting right now, we say talofa to Archie Soliai. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Hey, talofa and aloha, Mike. Good to talk to you.
I was teasing you off the air because this is your second go around as chair. Usually that's like punishment, but it is kind of interesting. When did you even first become aware of this thing called the council?
I've always enjoyed fishing when I was young and growing up. And I actually first heard of the council back in the 90s. I think it was the early to mid 90s. When I heard about it, my former father-in-law was an avid fisherman, and he was the one of the chairs of the council back then, and that's how I first found out about it. The council has done some tremendous stuff, through the years since it first was initiated back in way back when.
I was going to say like 40 plus ago, right? But here's what I think is what I think is terrific. We've had a lot of examples here in Hawaii about it, but now you in Samoa. The Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council really is a bottoms-up organization, right? I mean, you started as a youngster. I mean, who knew that you were going to be heading for this gig down the road in your life, right?
Well, little did I know, let alone be on the council, but here working at Starkist, the biggest employer, private employer here in American Samoa, I never thought it would happen.
Well, let me tell you why I think it's really neat. A lot of people, I know when Peter Young and a lot of guys, when we first started talking about his book called Aku and everything, it really did circle in on your part of the ocean. And what's interesting is it's like in the old Western towns, everybody worked for the ranch, or the saloon, mm-hmm. And here it is. Mm-hmm. Isn't it sort of easy? Most everybody in your life is not somehow touched, but directly touched by the cannery that you run, that you work at, right?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, Starkist was established here in 1956.
Wow.
So we're what? Yeah. Sorry, was it 63?
What I was going to say, I bet you, Archie, that people would be amazed at how much of the equipment. I mean, obviously, time has forced you to modernize over the years, but I'll bet you that there are still things that your guys can maintain that have been there for the whole time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're so far removed from everywhere else that mm-hmm. we have to be as resilient as we can in maintaining the equipment.
You can't just drive down to the Napa store and pick up a new
motor.
Right?
You can't go down to find a Home Depot here. Yeah. You won't be able to do that.
Let me wait for weeks. Let me tell you one thing that I think is really cool, and it's how we met, and it's how I've met plenty of people in the council. Is when there are meetings here, I cannot believe the chop suey list everybody comes up with when they get to Honolulu and they say, okay, I got 3 days of stuff for shopping just for Auntie. I got to get out. I got to get on the road. Isn't it unbelievable?
That's,
No, I was going to
say that's the Pacific Way, man.
It is,
you know.
But I also
think that's the Pacific Way.
It's also pretty amazing when you think about it. Is we here are in the lap of luxury. We don't think so. We think, we got to go to the mainland to buy stuff. People from Samoa, people from Samoa that have this wonderful relationship with us. I see these boxes.
I'll tell you a funny thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a funny thing, you know, about the macadamia nuts and the chocolates from Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
One time I came back from Honolulu and I forgot to buy some, you know, macadamia nuts.
Oh, boy.
So the next morning I went, to the shop and I bought some Hershey's and, you know, and I took it to my staff and I gave it to them and they said, oh, this is not the same as the stuff from Hawaii. I go, that's the stuff from the mainland.
Yeah. But, you know, there is another thing. For instance, I remembered when the canned wahoo came here in the very beginning from what was the name of the place that was doing that? I forget. But, you know, it was like $4 a can. And people said, what are you doing? Well, that's because it came from Samoa. And it's rare. What everybody asked me when they've heard that I was going to do this segment with you on StarKist. What is the main species that you folks can at StarKist?
Well, it's skipjack.
Yeah.
Skipjack is the main species. Tuna, so we package the species that we purchase are skipjack, big eye, yellowfin, and then we also buy albacore. You know, those are the main products, species that we use. But it's funny you mentioned wahoo because we also can wahoo when we can get the fish.
Mm-hmm.
It's a novelty item, only when we're able to procure the fish that we're able to process it.
You know, we know that the largest skipjack ever caught in Hawaiian waters was 41 pounds. And we know that we call it after 10 pounds, it's called otaro or otaru. What's the average there at StarKist? I know it's a big swing of the pendulum, but what are some of the bigger skipjack that you see?
We've seen skipjack close to 30 pounds.
Yeah. Amazing, huh?
Yeah, they get pretty big. But then we also see smallest, right? So, you know, it's a wide spectrum with respect to size and weight.
Maybe there's another thing you could explain, Archie, and that is, you know, everybody knows that's a fisherman. You know, I know that if you're catching a lot of aku, you got to really take care of it. It doesn't travel as well as some of the other fish. Basically speaking, when your boats bring you the skipjack that you're canning, how long have they been out generally?
It depends. A fishing trip averages anywhere from 4 weeks to 8 to 9 weeks, depending on which area they're fishing at.
And
it depends on how good the catch is. I know a good friend of mine, he is a captain on one of the Perseiners. I mean, he did a trip. He did two trips in 3 months and under 2 3-week trips.
Wow.
He came back fully loaded.
Oh, my goodness. Well, see, the people don't understand. Here, when you go to the auction, the fish are fresh. This is a fresh fishery, much more so. So when the guys go out and they're out for that length of time, how are they freezing? How are they doing their fish? How are they freezing it?
They treat it in brine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they keep it in brine in their freezers. So once they get here, you know, they just offloaded. It helps preserve the fish.
Yeah, I should say. And by the way, that being said, how far reaching is the marketing or distribution for StarKist? Where does the fish get sent mostly?
Mike, everything that we make here goes to the U.S.
Yep.
100% of what they make here is all for the U.S. market. So we don't sell internationally from this facility. Everything we sell goes to the U.S.
Yeah. Now, how does that bode when it's time to do things? Like right now, we know that we're all in trouble. And I'm going to ask you a little later on, or maybe even in part two of what we're doing is how the fishery is doing. I do know that here in Honolulu, and I'm sure you know that at the present time, it's only about 20-30% of our fleet that are fishing. There's just the bottoms out of it because of the restaurants and the hotels. But you are shipping canned product. Does your flow change that much with that sort of slowdown that we're having here in Honolulu?
Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet. We're okay with inventory at the moment, but again, there's a lot of uncertainty in the near future. So we're fortunate that there have been some emergency assistance that have been provided. For example, the observer, the no observer requirement. Mm-hmm.
Wait, RT. I'm really glad you said that, because that's one of the main questions I wanted to ask you. I'm not sure what mm-hmm. percentage of the boats that fish out of Samoa have an observer, but I knew that the whole program, because of the cessation of our schools and our training centers, that these folks are non-existent, that there's been a waiver. But the good news is that the fishermen are honest and they're reporting their interactions. I'm imagining the same thing would hold true there, would it?
Yeah, well, you know, we're U.S. flag vessels, right? Our purseiders mm-hmm. that deliver our U.S. flag. And it's 100% observer coverage mm-hmm. compared to our other brothers and sisters from other parts of the world. You know, it's not the same coverage percentage, although there is a requirement.
Yeah.
But the U.S. flag vessels are all, you know, they don't go out. They won't, and they can't go out fishing unless there's an observer on board.
You know, and the same thing holds true here, but only with our shallow set, with the sword fishing, I mean, with the Shitomi guys. But there are a high percentage of the boats going out of here, as you know. We're probably here in Honolulu, and you could attest to that because of your back and forth travels. We are as highly regulated as any fishery could be.
Well, we're regulated to death, Mike. I think. It's sad to say. It's good, but there's no, you know, equity because the other fisheries from, you know, other countries are not being regulated the same way as we are.
Well, we know one thing, Archie. It's a little bit easier around the main Hawaiian islands to find somebody that's moving in on us or trying to fish where they shouldn't fish. Your neck of the ocean's a lot bigger, and some of the folks are further in between. How is enforcement done there? How is it that you know if somebody's fishing, say, in your waters, that there's somebody that's going to go get them? Is it the Coast Guard that helps you? Who helps you maintain that?
Well, all fishing boats are required to have a VMS, a vessel monitoring system, so they can track electronically where your location is. And, you know, the Coast Guard, NOAA, Office of Law Enforcement, they monitor, you know, track all the movements. And it's funny because it happens in Hawaii, and I know it happens in REZ also, is, you know, you see a line, you know, of the VMS, and then all of a sudden it goes blank. And then mm-hmm. you see it on the other side of the EZ, so you just wonder and speculate what they did.
Well, you know, it's very, very disturbing. We know that. And yet, I don't want to say that it's under police, but it kind of is. And it must be very, very difficult on some of your folks to know that somebody else is breaking the rules and they can't because they're going to get caught. And if they get caught, there's big consequences. Some of these other guys, it doesn't seem when they go back to their own country that there are any consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of the frustration that, you know, the fleet, the U.S. fleet, and then some of the other foreign vessels that deliver, foreign flag vessels that deliver here, you know, that there is no, I don't know how they're enforcing it, but they know that, you know, some of the other countries aren't observing those regulations. It's an international regulation that everybody signed off on.
You know, I do know that maybe in the past, the science wasn't as good as trying to determine what the catch is there. I know that you probably have in your neck of the Pacific a lot of anecdotal information that we don't have in the more populated areas. Isn't it true that a lot of your older folks, they really know and they can explain where the fish are and fish aren't? Has there ever been a problem of people being able to catch fish around American Samoa?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I mean, I'm a sports fisherman, so I can't speak for the commercial fishermen. But the challenge is that I hear from our local longliners, you know, they're traveling further out for mm-hmm. several reasons, one of which, you know, is regulations on where they can fish. And then the catch rates are lower, which, you know, see... it's attributed to more boats out there fishing.
Sure. Well, we've also heard, and I don't know how much truth there is, but we've also been told that sometimes if there is an adjoining fishery where people are going way over quota, that affects the ability for the fish in the mid ocean, in the open ocean, to connect and to spawn and to move around. And if you take away a lot of the babies, there's no babies later.
Right. Absolutely. And you know, that's what's the argument that's being made right now is, you know, that quota issue.
You know, I have a producer that's pacing by my window, and he put up a question mark. He says, "How many people work at the cannery? Can I get a job?" you know, the answer is probably yes. But you know, we earlier, Archie, and by the
way, hiring.
Yeah, Archie Solii at Starkist is our guest in this segment of our Go Fish, brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Manson Cuts. Wouldn't be fair if we didn't tell you. If you want to see the fruits of Archie and everybody else's labor, go to wpcouncil.org. And check it out. There's a lot of great stuff on there, particularly if you guys are home and you got students at home right now because of the schools being closed. It's a great source of information about the ocean and about fishing. You see some really cool stuff. You can even get some free, you teachers, you can get teaching materials, coloring books, maps, videos, all kinds of stuff. Were you, by the way, Archie, were you surprised at the amount of action that is now happening at the council level here in Honolulu, reaching out and trying to work with our young people everywhere?
No, I'm not surprised, Mike. I think it's, you know, in the Pacific, we thrive on our resources, right?
Mm-hmm.
And fisheries is one of our the ocean is our main resource. So the fact that the council has ventured into, you know, outreach and educating, you know, our younger generation, trying to push them to go into fisheries as a career, you know, it's not a surprise because, and here in American Samoa, we're so far removed that, you know, that's our number one resource aside from the people.
Well, I can tell
you. No, I think it's a great thing that we're doing.
Yeah, I can tell you one thing. Some of these young people that I've met that have come up from Samoa to go to school and turn and go back, what a blessing. I mean, you know, that's the opening.
Well, we've got some sharp people that fortunately to receive that scholarship from the council.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot. But here's another thing, I skip by it. Just so people get some sort of an idea about numbers, on a regular basis, around how many people are employed? I know it's seasonal in some areas, but basically, how large is the company Starkist in Samoa?
Okay, well, it's something that I'm proud to talk about, Mike. Because believe it or not, Starkist is the biggest cannery in the world.
In the world,
this facility. You know, I think other countries they have a series of canneries owned by the same company, but under one roof. This is the biggest cannery in the world. We produce about the capacity is 460 metric tons per day, but we're averaging about 440 at the moment.
Boy, that's amazing.
And that's being supported by about 2,400, 2,500 employees.
You know, that's the thing, Archie, that people really have to know. When you said earlier, and gang, I asked Archie the question on purpose. We've actually talked about it before, but all of their cannery, all of the Starkist cannery in American Samoa, that fish is being eaten by us here in Hawaii and throughout the country. And at this time when everybody is forced to stay at home, you can just imagine of all the creative ways people are coming up to cook that tuna that came from Samoa. And bless them for that. That's an awful lot of fish. It's all, what I'm saying is right in the beginning, right? Every single person walking down the street there is got one foot connected to that cannery, no matter what anybody thinks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, the Starkist has been here since 1963. So we're looking at a 57 year, my numbers are, It's late in the day for me, Mike.
And by the way, it is a miracle, gang. We're talking. I tell you one thing that impresses me, and that is the honor that it goes for. I mean, we're talking about now since 57 years. There's a lot of second and third generation people working in that cannery side by side for family, right?
Right. You know, here's a funny short story for you. One of our employees, her son was drafted by the Raiders 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she resigned. You know, her son's a millionaire.
Yeah, right.
So she resigned, moved off island, and then about a year later, she came back, and I saw her. She was working again. She had reapplied. And I asked her, what are you doing here? Oh, I got bored. I love working at StarKist. I got bored. I go, your son's making all that money. Yeah. You don't need to work anymore.
That's a terrific story. And you know what, Archie, that sort of mirrors. I know a guy that was with Monterey Bay Canners. And they had a family in there, and one of the guys won a huge lottery, and so six of the workers in the cannery were able to quit, to retire, to go work on that lottery and help them, you know, sensibly grow it, not just go buy stuff. And about a year into it, the guy that was the head accountant for this family, this rich family, said, "I'm going back to the cannery. That's the job I really loved." He was proud of the way everybody worked on those lines. You need to talk about that. Walk me through a typical day when a boat comes in and gets unloaded and the fish starts going into the cannery. Where does it go? What happens to it?
So just backtrack a little bit, you know, about the business model that StarKist uses. You know, we purchase the round fish, the whole fish, which is directly delivered here, and we offload it. Compared to our competitors, they buy loins, which is processed in low-wage countries that are subsidized, and they ship the loins to, you know, to the U.S. We process the whole fish, everything from, you know, skinning to gutting. We process all of that. All the waste goes to process fish meal and fish oil. So we use the whole part of the fish. So once the boats are unloaded, the fish are sized. They go into the freezer until they're pulled for processing, and then once it's pulled, they send it through the there's a thawing process. And then after thawing, it's gutted, and everything's eviscerated. They go into what we call the pre-cooker oven, and they're cooked in there to a certain temperature, depending on the size and the weight. And after that, it's chilled. You know, they bring the temperature down, and then from there, you know, it goes into the cleaning room where the head, the skin, you know, the bones are all, everything's removed. And then, you know, the loins are processed when we do canning and we do pouch here as well.
Yeah, you know, the pouches are really coming along, Archie, but go back to the canning part for just a minute, because I just love it. When you open a can of StarKist, you can see the fillet. I mean, you know that it was like boom in the can, and it comes apart with a fork, and it's flaky. It's not ground up to some kind of, what kind of meal is that in there? You can see the fish.
Right. And, you know, I'd vouch, I'm biased opinion here, Mike, but, you know, I think the quality is much better because you're only handling the fish once versus double handling. If you're buying the loins from, you know, wherever you're getting it from, you're basically handling it twice, right?
Well, there's more room for error in that way too, isn't there?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So okay, now with all of this handling and I mean all of this processing, now it's in the can. What happens to it?
So after it's canned, it's retorted. That's the final treatment for any bacteria that's left on the cans. And then it's labeled, cased, containerized. On the boat 2 weeks later, and it's in L.A.
That's
Long
just,
Beach.
Talk about efficiency, right?
Yep.
Now, what was the difference when you started? Well, that was way more recently, but back in the day, how long did it take that fish to get from the cannery to L.A.?
You know, it depends on inventory and you know, what the packaging is, the required you know, orders, but it could take from ocean to plate, it's a matter of short weeks.
Well, what about the other side of it? I know that, you know, here in Hawaii, you're supposed to have a 2-week supply of everything. You got your canned goods and your stuff, and you got your hurricane, so your tsunami packs. What I'm very, very interested in is, first of all, how it's determined, and second of all, the shelf life, because I do know that your product has a real good shelf life, you know, that, and that's obviously the way it's prepared and cleaned and cutted and cooked. But generally, how long is that shelf life? How, when they put the stamp on the bottom of a StarKist can, about how many years is it good for?
It's a 2-year shelf life on the product.
That's most wonderful.
Of the product, it's about 2 years. Yeah, 2-year shelf life. And one of the things that many people don't know is that we're heavily regulated and audited by the government, the U.S. government. We just had a visit by FDA early last year. And then we have USDA, USDC, they're here very frequently, mm-hmm. up until coronavirus. They're very frequently because we also process for the government. You know, the military, the school lunch programs, Starkist, this facility is the only one that meets that Buy America requirement, for tuna.
Yeah, and I know that that's a sense of pride for everybody there. And I do know, before we run out of time in this segment, Archie, let's walk through not just the employment opportunities like my guy was just teasing when he held up the sign. I don't think he's teasing. He's saying no. He's looking at me through the window saying, hey, where's my ticket? That means that you have a number of people all the time that are retiring after working for the company 20, 30, 40 years or even longer in some cases. And that means that you have a constant need for recruitment, not just of their kids and grandkids, but new people. Where do they come from?
We're always hiring, Mike. Mm-hmm. We're always hiring. Because like you said, the turnover is very high. People, the attrition rate, people leave. We're always recruiting. Mm-hmm. We're always looking for professional, skilled people, engineers, electricians, that we hire from locally first. Our priority is to hire locals.
Sure.
But if we can't find, if we can't find any skill sets that are available on island, then we look overseas, the U.S., Hawaii, or the Pacific Islands we recruit from. But yeah, I mean, if he has any skills that we can use here at the cannery,
there's another thing that you hit upon, and I think it's very important. Let people close their eyes for a minute listening to the radio and try and envision how large the piece in the property is, how many hours of the day does it operate depending on the season, and more importantly, talk about all of the machinery. I mean, never mind just the fish and the cutting and the processing and the chilling. Let's talk about all those machines. Somebody's got to keep them fixed and running.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're always trying to recruit, Mike. I mean, you're talking about somebody trying to envision how big the Starkist facility is, this plant, not including the canned plant and the neighboring facility that we just leased. The Starkist plant itself is about 410,000 square feet of covered area.
That's almost 10 acres, folks. That's a lot of property.
Yep.
Yep. And the other side of it is, are you guys ever stuck with things that you need? For instance, we never talked about this. The fish supply we did talk about, but what about all the other supplies? I mean, when you start canning and packaging, and I skipped over the pouch thing, which I want you to expand on a little bit, but where does all of that stuff come from? You must import every single thing you need.
All the raw materials come from off island.
Yeah.
Everything, all the ingredients, packaging, everything comes from off island. It's a well-oiled machine, and I think the machine needs to be well-oiled because of the lead times in getting product stuff here. And so the system is well maintained.
Archie, I bet you have a couple guys that can fix anything. You know what? It something's broke. No, it's not. It just needs Paul. Where's Paul? He'll come fix the thing.
Yep. We've got some of those guys.
Yeah, I bet.
We've got some of those guys. They're amazing. Some of these guys, they're able to fix something with nothing, or improvise. Well, we used to call, MacGyver.
Yeah,
there's a guy here we call him MacGyver.
Yeah, that's good. And I remember the old MacGyver show too. As a matter of fact, it's sort of neat because I've been on the new one. The new MacGyver show, it's a little more bit high tech. But I think what's a way to finish this out, because, oh, by the way, I've invited Archie to come back telephonically, and he's going to be with me in next week's show too, and we're going to talk about more of the things that he's doing with the council and some of the things that everybody in the council agrees needs help from your congressional delegation, from Mazie Hirono and Brian Schatz to Tulsi Gabbard, and, of course, to Ed Case. We need these guys to go to bat for the council and for the fishing industry here. But I wanted to make sure that you understood, everybody, through Archie, that things are pretty good in American Samoa. And when you buy that, when you buy that Starkist, what do they say, Charlie? They want Charlie. They don't want fish. They want fish to taste good. And that's one of the things you get when you said that real quickly. What different flavors go in different cans? Because I know that you used to have some different put-ups. Is it all the same? Is it all oil, or is it some oil and water? What is it?
Well, again, it depends on what the demand is and what the pack plan is. But we make the majority of the products that we make is tuna and oil, tuna and water.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also make tuna and oil. Tuna and oil is some of the, the albacore product is, albacore, as you know, is a premium fish. It's much more expensive.
Interesting, Archie, interesting you say that, because here it doesn't do as well for raw fish for sushi because it's not as oily as the aku and the skipjack and everything else. But when somebody comes from the mainland, oh, you got albacore, I'm in. And isn't it true? Look at even companies like Costco. Look at the albacore that these guys are canning now. Same thing with you when you can get it. I'm sure it's nowhere near as plentiful as the skipjack, but is it a pretty good supply?
Yeah, I think the supply is steady. We're just going into the season for South Pacific albacore, which starts in April. So we should be seeing our local longliners. You know, they should be heading out fairly soon, hopefully.
Yeah,
that's coronavirus doesn't impact them.
That's exactly what I wanted to make sure that we end on, because next week when we come back and talk about some of the things that are really impacting the fishery here in the main Hawaiian Islands. We know it goes very, very far out, and it doesn't take much of a problem before the more thousands of miles you add on, the bigger the problem comes. But the good report that you're giving me is things are pretty much kind of sort of still normal?
Kind of sort of for now. Yeah. We envision some challenges in the very immediate future because of, you know, all the turmoil that that we're facing in the world now with respect to coronavirus. But this may be something that we can talk about next week.
Yeah, and does it now? Here's another thing: we know that our auction here it's a head, guts, and tail. It's not head, guts, and tail like yours is. But what it is the price fluctuates on supply and demand. I'm kind of guessing that a lot of your consumers on the mainland have a steady demand. And right now, I would anticipate, if anything else, with more and more people have to make it on their own at home, that there will be an increase in the cost. I mean, not a cost, but an increase in the demand on canned fish, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the demand, we're humming production to keep up with demand in the mainland.
Yeah, that's terrific.
Because everybody's just stocking up and, you know, bulk buying because of being quarantined. So,
well, yeah. I'm so glad we could get together. I look forward to some more next week, Archie. Thank you for joining me today. We'll see you again real soon, okay?
Okay, Mike.
Yeah, aloha. Now, by the way, if you want to hear something on the show, it's easy peasy. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. Dot the I's, cross the T's. Go out and catch plenty of fish. And every now and again, throw another can of that Starkist in your shopping cart now that you know a little bit more about where that fish comes from and how much they take care of it. That's all for now. We'll see you next time. Aloha.